This episode, Pets as Food in Denmark, Costa Rica's Crazy Colored Shark, The End of Gadget Batteries, Searching for Amelia, Taylor Gets Engaged, The Little League World Series, and Tossing Tomatoes in Spain.
Over here!
Hey, listen up!
And welcome to Newsy Palooza, the news pool for curious kids and adults. I'm your host, Alicia of Shanka Prickett, and as ever, I'm joined by the sound effects editor and big story explainer, otherwise known as my mama.
Hello, hello, I'm Lindy Prickett, and yes, welcome back to this monthly episode of Newsy Palooza. And boy, do we have a lot to get through this month.
We sure do. First up, we'll explain why people in Denmark are offering their ailing pets as food at zoos. Yes, we'll dive deep into the Danish cycle of life belief. Staying with nature, move on over, Nemo. There's a shark that's been spotted off the coast of Costa Rica that is lighting up the ocean. In tech news, is it the end of batteries for our tech devices? If so, then how? The search is back on for Amelia Earhart's plane that famously went down in the Pacific Ocean way back in 1937. In entertainment news, Taylor Swift is finally getting hitched. In sports, find out who takes the crown in the Little League World Series. And why, oh why, do the Spanish like to toss tomatoes at each other? Yes, we'll have a special report from one of the craziest, or do I mean the tastiest, festivals around. That and more. So let's dive on in. First up is
the big news story.
Ah, the season of autumn is upon us, at least in the Northern Hemisphere. A slight chill is in the air, in the mornings anyway, here in India. And the days are indeed getting shorter.
And we're closer to the holiday season.
Ah, yes, the changing seasons are like a cycle. Things are born in spring, thrive in summer, then wilt a bit during autumn, and die during winter.
And then the whole thing starts again.
Correct.
But where are we going with this?
I'm so glad you asked. Well, today we're talking about another important cycle, the way the food chain works.
You mean the cycle of life is the circle of life?
Cycles are circular, after all.
So you mean like how lions and tigers are at the top of the food chain because no other animal eats them? Cute little bitty bunnies and squirrels are at the bottom?
Yes, but even smaller animals and plants are even lower on that chain.
Right, yes, of course.
So for example, here's how food chain could be organized. Grass is eaten by the bugs are eaten by the frogs are eaten by the snakes, and the snakes are eaten by mongoose, and mongoose are eaten by tigers.
Poor mongoose.
But why not poor grass and bugs and etc.?
Ah, yes, there's that.
Still, the point is, when the tiger who's at the top of the food chain dies, its body decomposes, like kind of withers and disappears a bit, back into the soil.
Which helps the grass grow.
Which feeds the bugs. Which feeds the frogs.
And on and on.
And so you have
the circle of life.
Exactly. Now, keeping all that in mind, there was a news story about a zoo in Denmark, that's in Northern Europe, that's getting a lot of attention lately.
Go on.
Well, the zoo put out an advertisement asking for people to donate their sick or dying pets.
Donate?
Yes.
Oh, I'm not so sure I'm comfortable with where this is going.
Keep the circle of life in mind. Yes, they ask for sick or dying pets to be used as food to feed their lions and tigers.
Wait. You're telling me that the zoo is asking people to bring in their pets to be eaten by lions. Please tell me you're joking. This sounds so wrong.
I know, but I'm not joking. The Aalborg Zoo in Denmark posted a request for people to bring in sick or dying, quote, chickens, rabbits, and guinea pigs to be euthanized, which is a fancy word for...
Yeah, it means, well, put down or put to sleep.
Or to end life humanely or painlessly. Yes, the animals would be euthanized and then given to the predators.
I'm still not seeing the circle of life here. I mean, to drop off my old cat and be euthanized and fed to the lions, what kind of food chain is that?
Well, first of all, it's not dogs or cats. Come on, Leela. It has to be small animals like the ones I just mentioned. And the food chain, my dear, may not be as perfect as it is in the wild, but giving a zoo predator a small whole animal is probably better than feeding it canned food or something really processed.
And why? If kibble is good for house pets, then why not give it to the lions at the zoo?
It's not that great to feed to house pets, actually. It rots their teeth, to be honest. But zoo officials say giving predators whole animals to feed is super nutritious for all sorts of reasons we don't really have to go into here.
I guess I'm starting to see the circle. I guess.
Yeah, in fact, get this. People in Denmark have been donating their sick or dying animals to zoos for many years.
They have?
Yeah, but they renew their call out every few years. And since this zoo's latest post, more people have been talking about it, probably thanks to social media. There's one story even about a 13-year-old girl who wanted to donate her pony.
Oh my goodness.
Yes, to the zoo. But according to her mother, the girl wanted to do it. She said she'd rather have her very sick pony be euthanized and fed to a lion than simply just disposed of. For that girl, and for many Danes, I reckon, the circle of life through the zoo donations is a very positive thing to do.
But there's still just one question. If zoo predators need to feed on the whole animals to keep them healthy, shouldn't they also include, like, hunting and catching their prey?
I see what you mean. Like, giving a whole animal to a lion is, you know, maybe great for its teeth and its nutrition, but not so great for its physique if they're not running around trying to chase it. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. I mean, like, don't they get fat? Like a couch potato just having their food brought to them?
Yeah, zoos aren't perfect.
Yeah, I'm not keen on seeing animals locked up, to be honest, either.
Yeah, me either. But many zoos do help with conservation efforts and scientific research, so there's that.
Correct. Now, staying with our nature theme.
It's the call of nature.
Nature.
Get on your safari suit. Or squeeze into your scuba gear. And get ready to hop into a Jeep.
Or a submarine.
Submarine.
Because Mother Nature is calling.
Nature.
Today's nature story is also kind of a mystery, I guess.
Ooh, this sounds, mysterious. But, what exactly do you mean?
Well, some fishermen off the coast of Costa Rica,
which is a Central American country with coasts in both the Pacific Ocean and the Caribbean Sea, in case you wanted to know.
Correct. Well, the fishermen reeled in a really, like, really unique-looking creature the other day.
Ooh, mysterious indeed. I know we don't have any correspondents in Costa Rica, but we do have a new team of sisters out of Washington, D.C., by way of Miami. So...
yes, that would be Sydney and Eva Gonzalez. Over to y'all.
Thanks, Leela. Yeah, the creature that was pulled in by fishermen was actually...
a shark! OMG, it was a shark!
A nurse shark, to be exact.
But this wasn't just any old nurse shark.
No, it was... drumroll, please!
Orange!
Yes, an orange nurse shark was on the other end of the fisherman's line, and it was a pretty strange sight to behold.
The fisherman taking the video was like, it's so beautiful! But honestly, it would have freaked me out.
Honestly, I could never see you on a fishing trip, but I digress. The orange nurse shark caught the attention of some scientists who recently published a study about it.
To figure out, why is it like that? Are there more? Does it have little baby orange sharks?
Spoiler, no orange baby sharks. The scientists said its color was probably caused by two rare genetic conditions. Albinism,
which is when you lack melanin pigment and appear white.
Exactly. And xanthism.
Which is... what is that anyway?
It's when there's too much yellow pigment and not enough melanin. Anyways, the shark had both, hence the orangish hue.
Gotcha. So, what happened to the shark?
Still out there, I guess.
I'll keep my eyes peeled during my next scuba diving expedition in Costa Rica. After my fishing trip.
Yeah, right. In Washington, D.C., this is Eva Gonzalez and Cindy Gonzalez for Newsy Paloozy!
Hey, Hey, thanks a lot, you guys, for that fab report. And a very big welcome into the coolest news pool around.
But you know, that's not the only crazy color story from the deep blue sea.
I know. I just saw new pictures of a very famously odd and colorful manta ray.
Which are like stingrays, but without the stingy bit.
Yes, thank you. It was photographed recently off the coast of Australia, and is also a very rare color.
Rare and very, very pretty.
Yes, we are talking about pink. Barbie pink. It was first spotted 10 years ago when researchers thought the unusual color was caused by infection or weird diet.
All that horrible plastic polluting the oceans, perhaps?
No, Mother, not this time. Turns out it was also just a genetic mutation.
And as a little crash course or reminder, all living things are made of genes, which are like tiny sets of instructions that tell our bodies how to grow and work.
Right, so a genetic mutation is like a little mistake or...
like a small typo in those instructions that can change how something looks or functions.
So for the Barbie manta ray, it was a genetic mutation caused by an overproduction of reddish pigments or the underproduction of typical dark pigments.
Which has the fancy-pantsy name of erythism. In fact, the combination of red hair and freckles is considered a mild expression of erythism in humans.
Well, there you go. So many fab facts in this report, too.
You're telling me our quiz of the most fab, fabulous background facts at the end of our episode is gonna be a good one. And now...
it's time for...
Technology news.
Okay, so way back, like, you know, a few minutes ago when we were talking about life cycles.
Yes.
Well, did you know the phrase can also be used in technology to describe a particular product that's been replaced by something more innovative?
No, but I think I get it. Yeah, like when old tech becomes outdated and replaceable. Like those silver round things I used to play music on back in the day.
You mean compact discs?
Yeah, CDs. When something like that gets replaced, you can say its life cycle is over.
Exactly. So with CDs, they were invented, they became popular, then died when better technology came along.
Hello, iPods, iTunes, and then Spotify.
Correct again. Well, now there's another piece of technology whose life cycle may be coming to an end.
Which is?
Batteries.
Batteries? Wow, that'd be great.
I know, right? Well, a group of scientists led by the University College of London conducted some research that could lead to a new way of charging electronics, like keyboards, remote controls, alarm clocks, those kind of things, using indoor light.
Wow. So, like a solar panel, but the solar part is actually coming from a light bulb.
Yes, more or less. Typical solar panels use silicon. Basically, when sunlight hits the silicon, it sets electrons in motion, creating an electric current.
Electrons are little things that aren't atoms, but this electrical current can power small devices.
Right, but instead of silicon, the ones in the study were made from a special crystal called perovskite.
What now?
Perovskite. It's a super special material because it can be adjusted and manipulated so that it absorbs indoor light rays better.
Wow. So, you know, I can just like slap a film of perovskite on my alarm clock and call it a day? Or...
yes and no. The researchers say that while perovskite is great to use for indoor lights, it does have some defects that make it less than perfect.
Go on.
So what scientists did in their study was make the perovskite more viable.
Which means they made it work better.
Exactly. They use various chemicals to improve the perovskite so it can better absorb indoor light.
So it can one day be used to replace batteries.
Exactly. So the life cycle of batteries.
But we could say we're on the path to battery-free electronics.
What's that? I'll tell you what. That's the halftime bell, which means it's time to hear what's making news around the rest of the world. Hold on tight. It's
Around the World in 80 Seconds.
Hold tight!
Israel's full-scale ground invasion of Gaza has intensified, despite growing international criticism. The United Nations has formally accused Israel of genocide, which is the intentional destruction, in whole or in part, of a national, ethnic, racial, or religious group. In South Asia, protests by students against corruption and digital censorship in Nepal has turned violent. Dozens of people have been killed, and the government has been overthrown. In the U.S., a prominent conservative activist, Charlie Kirk, was fatally shot earlier this month while speaking at a university in Utah. A 22-year-old man has been charged with aggravated murder, though some are calling this a political assassination. And huge space news! NASA's Perseverance rover has uncovered the strongest evidence yet of ancient life on Mars. It found microbial organic compounds and minerals in a riverbed rock that resemble biological formations seen on Earth.
Thank you so much for that.
Wait for it.
That wibbity wobbity zibbity zappity crap. What's making headlines elsewhere in the world, Mama?
Woo! Anytime, Leela. So our next story is yet another mystery.
Another weirdly colored animal?
Oh no. But it is one of the world's oldest unsolved mysteries. The mystery of what happened to Amelia Earhart during her round-the-world flight.
Amelia Earhart? As in the famous aviator who wrote tons of records flying across the world, back before most people had ever even been in a plane?
Totally. She pushed so many boundaries until she disappeared on a flight in 1937 somewhere over the Pacific Ocean.
And they never found the wreckage.
That's right. Well, now a group from Purdue University in Indiana in the USA are reopening the search.
Well, over in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, on Team New Zealand, we have a budding young pilot, Jessica Graham, who I bet would love to give us the story.
Thanks, guys. That's right. Amelia Earhart, famous for being the first woman to fly solo across the Atlantic Ocean in 1932. She was one of the most celebrated aviators of her time. On July 2nd, 1937, Amelia, then 39, set out from Miami with her navigator Fred Noonan in an attempt to become the first woman to fly around the world following the equator. That's the longest possible route, 40,000 kilometers or 25,000 miles. They were last seen on the island of New Guinea, north of Australia, about 35,000 kilometers into their mission. They then took off across the Pacific Ocean, heading for Holland Island in their Lockheed Electra aircraft, never to be seen again. Exactly what happened to Amelia and Fred remains one of the great aviation mysteries. For years, investigators have believed the pair ran out of fuel and crash-landed in the ocean. But what's this? Her plane might have been found. Yes, satellite pictures have shown a possible image of the aircraft on the shoreline of an uninhabited island called Nikumaroro, 1,600 kilometres or 1,000 miles from Fiji. The Purdue researchers are planning to visit the island in November this year. We believe we owe it to Amelia and her legacy to fulfil her wishes, if possible, to bring the Electra back to Purdue, they say. Sadly, other researchers who went to the island in 2017 said it might only be a very boring coconut tree. Despite the expedition, Amelia Earhart will still remain an amazing role model for many. Could this be a historical moment? Who knows? We'll have to wait and see. In Wellington, this is Jessica Graham from Newsy-Paloozy.
Fascinating story. Thanks a lot for that, Jessica.
Yeah, thanks, Jessica. Do keep us posted, okay?
Now it's the ACE part of our podcast. That stands for...
Art, Culture, and Entertainment.
Darling.
Darling.
And of course, the biggest entertainment news this month is...
Dun dun dun!
Is that Taylor Swift has gotten engaged.
Or as I like to say, because it rhymes, Taylor Swift is getting hitched.
Yes, that is true. She is marrying Travis Kelce, who is a football player on the Kansas City Chiefs team. Which is really ironic, because in one of her songs, 15, in one of her first albums, she said... But in your life, you'll do greater things than dating the boy on the football team. Which is really funny because she's kind of talking to herself in that song and now she's marrying the guy on the football team. So how it happened was just after Taylor Swift announced that she will be releasing her new album, The Life of a Showgirl, Travis Kelce was having his backyard decorated and set up in this kind of enchanted foresty way. And so that when they were done with the podcast, it would all be ready so he could propose to her in this beautiful garden. And he did.
Sweet.
Very.
When's the wedding?
So none of that's really disclosed yet because they kind of want to have it personally and privately, but really exciting.
Really exciting, and I can't wait for you to get your invitation.
I know. Like, what am I going to wear?
I'll be ready to play ball!
Sports news!
So now that we're monthly, it does mean we're catching up on some slightly older news.
Yes, a month ago, a major sporting tournament got underway, and the champion game took place a couple weeks ago.
Yep, we're talking about the real World Series, because this one actually has a team from 10, yes, 10 different countries, and, you know, not just America.
We're, of course, talking about the Little League World Series, which is baseball.
For the Little Leagues, and guess who won it?
Here's a clue. We're giving this report to our favorite Taiwanese correspondent, Yu Qing Liu. Over to you.
Thanks, guys. The Little League World Series is such a huge event. It's 20 teams from 10 different countries all playing together in Williamsport, Pennsylvania for the championship. It's basically the World Cup of baseball, but for 10 to 12-year-old kids. Well, this year's final came down to Nevada versus Taiwan. And wait for it. Yes, Taiwan won 7-0. We're all so proud of our country's Little League. Ling Jingzhe was the star of the game. He pitched 5 scoreless innings and then blasted a 3-run triple. That's like being both the pitcher and the power hitter at the same time. How amazing is that? What makes this win even more awesome is that it's Taiwan's 18th championship, and their first win since 1996. For me, it's really special because I'm from Taiwan, and seeing our team win after so many years makes me feel really proud. These are kids our age showing the world what's possible. It's proof that if you practice hard, stay focused, and believe in yourself, you can do amazing things too. This is Yuqing Liu from Taiwan for Newsy Paloozy.
Thanks so much, Yuqing. Nice to hear from you in your beautiful country as ever. And finally, let's see what the Lucky Day Machine has for us this week.
Step right up.
Have a go at the
Lucky Day Machine.
The Lucky Day Machine.
What's it going to be today?
An oddball, no doubt.
An oddball, no doubt.
So, Mama.
So, Leela.
When would you say is an acceptable time to, throw a tomato on someone?
Wait, just what?
You know, get a tomato and throw it.
I would say there's probably never an acceptable time for that. Although, back in the day, if you were performing on stage and someone threw a tomato at you, it meant they weren't a fan, which I think is totally unacceptable, really.
Right, but what if I said there's a city in Spain where throwing tomatoes has become so popular that thousands of tourists visit the town each year on the last Wednesday of August to participate in a gigantic tomato-throwing festival?
I'd say that sounds like a story for our Spain correspondents, Nina and Marky Granjena.
You got it. Over to you guys.
Thanks, you guys. Well, in the city of Buñol, near Valencia, every year people gather for the Tomatina,
which is basically the biggest tomato fight you've ever seen.
It started back in 1945 when, story has it, a group of school children started a food fight. The tradition continued for years until
the mean dictator Franco put an end to the festival. Boo!
Eventually, the festival was reinstated and became even more popular.
Today, 20,000 people come just to throw tomatoes at each other.
There are roughly 130 tons of tomatoes used in the fight, all over ripe and grown just for the tomatina.
There's only one rule, squash before you toss.
No one wants a black eye and a tomato in the face.
1 hour later, it's over. Fire trucks come and clean everything up.
And, fab fact, did you know all the acid from the tomatoes actually leaves the streets cleaner than they were before? Personally, you'll never see me at the tomatina. Tomatoes make me gag.
For me, I'd like to see a chocolate milk fight. Marshmallows? Ooh, I know. How about we smear Nutella on everything and roll around in it?
Siblings, am I right?
In Barcelona, this is Nina Granjena and Marky Granjena for Newsy Palooza. Da 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 da.
Love it. Thank you all so much for this. Should I say juicy story?
Ooh, nice one. And it's time to wrap up the podcast with
the top five facts heard today.
Fab fact number one.
People in Denmark donate sick or dying pets to a zoo that use the pets to feed lions and tigers. Of course, the sick pets are humanely and painlessly put down first. What's the fancy word for that? Euthanize.
Fab fact number two.
A never seen before orange shark is spotted off the coast of Costa Rica. Scientists said its color was probably caused by two rare genetic conditions, albinism and xanthism. What is albinism? When you lack melanin pigment and appear white.
Fab fact number three.
When a manta ray was found in a bright shade of Barbie pink off the coast of Australia, experts also believe that strange color was caused by genetics. This time, an overproduction of reddish pigments or underproduction of typical dark pigments, which can be also the cause of red hair in humans. And that's called what? Erythrism.
Fab fact number four.
Your tech gadgets could be battery-free thanks to a breakthrough in indoor solar technology using a crystallized material that can be adjusted and manipulated, so it absorbs indoor light rays better. What's that material called? Perovskite.
Fab fact number five.
A group from Purdue University in Indiana are reopening the search for Amelia Earhart's plane as satellite images show what might possibly be the wrecked aircraft on a shoreline of an uninhabited island out in the Pacific Ocean. When did the groundbreaking pilot disappear? 1937.
Almost brings us to the end of this episode of Newsy Palooza. But first,
we would like to thank the lovely Jyoti Chuan for her production help and Julie Noche for helping write and produce this episode.
And a little reminder that we're now a monthly podcast, so do hold on tight for a few weeks.
Of course, you can always go back and listen to any of our old episodes, as they contain a lot of what we call in the news business evergreen stories.
As in stories that never really shed their leaves, but are full of fascinating, long-lasting information.
And the bonus is you get to hear Leela's 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, even 12-year-old voice. Did I happen to mention that she's now officially a teenager?
Okay, enough about me.
Yes, well, you'll find all the episodes on our website. That's newsypoolloozy.com, P-O-O-L. OOZI.com.
All right. Alrighty then, see you next month in the Happy Splashy Giant Newsy Paloozy. Oh,